Okay, so now we get to the real meat of this panel, I think. From an outsider's perspective, it was amazing to watch the coalitions that were built and people coming together, the various tribes, labor, veterans, environmental groups, coming together and all joining forces. What are some of those lessons that were learned? So let's see, let's start with down with Mike this time.
You know, there's a lot of weight given to maintaining a prayerful position in the situation, which is incredibly hectic and stressful and dangerous, actually. And yet there was a lot of effort given to not giving in to anger and becoming, you know, combative and confrontational with the police, even while they're shooting at you and beating you and spraying you and doing just unbelievably brutal things. It was a beautiful example of nonviolent direct action, and was, you know, to me that was the thing that I came away with, was the discipline of being able to stand in front of brute force and not react is so unbelievably powerful. The people, that is the way to capture the moral high ground. Do not react. Do not fight back. You know, let them show themselves for who they really are, and we will win.
So my perspective on the lessons that I've learned from visiting Standing Rock, but mostly just seeing how the fight is being fought, and the background that I have in fighting fossil fuel infrastructure out here, my first lesson that I learned is that we are making an impact. At Standing Rock, it's extremely visible right now, the impact, the problem that people are creating for the fossil fuel industry. And that repression and violent repression, repression using means other than violence and violent repression, are increasing regardless of the tactics that are being used, regardless of whether people are being peaceful, regardless of whether people are being lawful, that moneyed interests and people in power are willing to take means necessary to make sure that nothing stands in their way. And the basis of what that repression looks like is different and will be different for native resistors to fossil fuel infrastructure and white resistors to fossil fuel infrastructure. We need to pay attention and wake up that it doesn't matter if we're taking legal means to resist these extractive and violent interests, that eventually, when we're effective, there will be repression. And I think that that's really important to remember, one, because it changes how we view other people's efforts in resisting fossil fuel infrastructure or fascism, because regardless of what efforts people are choosing in how they resist these forces, there will be repression, and so we need to support each other in whatever choices we make. A second thing I learned that I'm excited about is fossil fuel industry is massive. Each corporation has branches all over the world, usually. Their extraction sites, their refining sites, their gas stations, whatever. The banks have branches all over the world or all over the country. They're enormous, enormous entities. But something that was really awesome that came out of the fight at Standing Rock is that the organizers actually used that size against their opponents. So they made call-outs for actions to happen all around the country and all around the world and said, Wells Fargo is a bank that's involved in the Dakota Access Pipeline. Let's target every single branch of Wells Fargo, because not everyone who wants to help resist the Dakota Access Pipeline can make it to Standing Rock, but they have a branch of Wells Fargo where they live. So let's use this massive entity's size and flip it on its back and make sure that they're targeted everywhere they exist. We need to learn from that. So we're fighting huge entities, fossil fuel corporations, the banks that fund them, you name it. Pick your fight. You're fighting huge moneyed interests, but let's use that against them. Want to work on how to apply that to other fights that are going on.
You know, for me, this is a Standing Rock is a pilgrimage. I think everyone who goes there is going on a pilgrimage to an idea, to a better world. I think that our makes me very proud of our Dakota Lakota people. I was talking to a friend of mine. She's also a journalist. She's Ogallala, and she was saying that no matter everything they did to us, everything they tried to do to us to make us less than we were. And you see our cultures standing off against each other, and you can clearly see which is the better culture, you know? And so, you know, I think that for Indian people, for Lakota Dakota people, this is an exhilarating moment. And it's the moment where all of our prophecies are coming, all of our prayers. My aunt, she's an elder in the Ochedi Shekoan Elders Council, and she was saying that, you know, all those prayers they did at the ghost dance, so they're finally, they're traveling here, they're coming here. This is coming about, you know. And you know, I don't really, in my reporting, I mean, the spiritual stuff to me is extremely private. And it's, but it, you know, definitely everything that's being done there is being done in ceremony, and the decisions are being made in ceremony. And I do ask everyone here to recognize the reemergence of the Great Sioux Nation, of the Ochedi Shekoan, and just what a miraculous thing it is, how hard we fought, and how badly we suffered for generations. And so I think that it's a fragile thing, too. It's something that should be nurtured, should be cared for. The trauma that those frontline communities, like the people of Cannonball, are going through is real, and they're taking that hit for all of you, and you should honor that. And not take it for granted. For me, as a Dakota woman, as a Native woman, I'm very proud of the contributions, the socio-cultural contributions that Indigenous cultures have made to the world today. The modern ideas that we have are the result of exchange, a cultural exchange that happened between the colonists, or the 13 original colonies, or 12, I guess, and much of it with the Iroquois Confederacy. My husband is here today. He is a member of the Six Nations of the Iroquois Confederacy. His grandfather was the chief of the Bear Clan Mohawk, and represented their nation at the UN. And you know, I think that you know, the ideas of democracy. I mean, you're coming from a feudal society in Europe and Asia. Are our leaders ruled by their tongue, by their ability to speak and move the hearts of the people? They didn't have standing armies. They didn't have force. We voted with our feet. And that's what everyone who goes to Standing Rock is doing on a certain level. They're voting with their feet. And they're voting for what they want, how they want this world to be ordered. And that place where Standing Rock is extremely special. But that is where the pipeline is being built, is where the white Buffalo Catwoman came to us. She came to us, she gave us the pipe. And it was at that, my Lala used to say, it's at that point that we became Lakota and Dakota. Before that, we weren't. Before she came and gave us the pipe, the chalupa, and gave us the seven sacred ceremonies, including the sun dance, at that point, we became Lakota Dakota. And I think this is what a real people are. They are people who are formed by a spiritual experience that connects them to the land and informs them their relationship to it. I think being a colony and being profit motive driven, you know, as you know, Trump is the absolute epitome of that whole, you know, prosperity gospel that America is built on. That's a very different paradigm than what our people have. And I think that once again, a cultural exchange needs to happen. Later, women's rights was inspired by the women of Seneca, the Seneca women. The women of Seneca Falls saw there was a Seneca village adjacent to Seneca Falls, New York. And they, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, when she saw that the Seneca women got to reorder their government, they were, a lot of our cultures are clan-based, matrilineal-based, so the women are in charge. And so she saw that, and it made it real to her that actually women could have equal rights. And if you read the speeches they did at Seneca Falls, they talk about that Iroquois community. They're like, we want what they have, you know? We see it every day, and we want it, you know? And so we have to realize the great debt that modernism, that the ideas that we go out in the world and we say, you should honor your women, you should, you know, you should have democracy. You know, these came out of these exchanges, just like the kind of exchange that's happening at Standing Rock. And I think that people, you know, need to honor that exchange. And one morning I woke up at the camp, and it was dawn, and they were doing a call to prayer. And they're urging everyone to come and bring their child with us. And hundreds of cars lined up. It was like a traffic jam in the morning at dawn. But all these Indian people and their allies were going to work. They were going to make a stand for the water. The new Shoni would come. You know, water is sacred. And it was really amazing. And as they were leaving, I could hear over the loudspeaker in camp, they were playing John Trudell. We hear his voice. He's a Santee Dakota poet. He passed away. And it was his voice, and he has this, if you're familiar with his poetry, you've heard his voice, he's very incantatory. He says things until the meaning deepens, you know. And he was saying, "We are the people of the earth. Who are you?" And as all the people were driving away, it was obvious then that we were the people of the earth.
I think it was 29 winds, I think, in the Northwest have been directly related to tribal sovereignty and treaty rights. That's important, but, you know, These you've got to understand, these governments are also, they have to deal with a lot of other governments and a lot of other government entities. They're stretched pretty thin. So you need to be good allies to them, particularly when it's not in your favor. You know, these tribes need assistance. They need allies. They need good allies for the long term. So, you know, please try and remember that. You know, we've got unions. The AFL, the leader of the AFL-CIO, the leader of Labor's International Union, the Teamsters, the UA Plumbers, and I think somebody else, but I can't remember at the moment, actually came out not only in favor of the pipeline, but mostly disturbing, called the people who were there extremists, and were saying that it was all right that they got attacked by dogs. They're saying things like, well, you know, you shouldn't have had women and children there. Why would you take them to Afghanistan? Last time I checked, I don't think we're in Afghanistan. And I don't think we're at war. Well, we kind of are, but not technically. So, you know, but the good thing about it is a lot of the rank and file members said no. Of those unions, and sure, there was other unions that just stood up and said, absolutely no, this isn't right. We need to support these people. But the rank and file people from those unions and from the building trades actually said no. And they went out there and they sacrificed and they raised money. They did things to do. And now they're talking about putting their money where their mouth is and doing some things. So that's, I think that's extraordinary. And I think that's, it shows you that if that institution can start changing, as well, I think that we have hope for the rest of those institutions. You know, there was a lot of other organizations, medical people. You know, we're talking about, some of us are talking about making it so as these things crop up, whether it's in Texas, Klamath, so on and so forth, these different areas, that we can send medical teams and emergency teams down there right off the bat. They're already ready to go, so that we're not reinventing the wheel on these things all the time. So, you know, there's a lot of relationships that have developed that I think as we move forward are going to make it easier for us to go out and to be there to fight these things. The only thing we have to watch out for is, are we strong enough and are we together enough to fight our own government to where they don't make it illegal and legal to, you know, shoot white people as well as red people when we do these. So, there's good things.